Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hello, cheeky monkeys. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Durano. Durano? No, Toronto. And this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Episode 65 and counting. Don't forget, every Monday, new episode posted. And I have a landing page where you can binge on the other 64 episodes that are up there at WGNplus.com and go to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic prompt. So, why don't we head right into the festivities here. Mick Kaler joining us on the podcast today. Hello, Mick.
Hey, bud. What's happening?
Well, not too much. I thought we should dive right in and a couple of updates before we get started. And I promise that we will get into the scripted part of the show.
You're like Donald Trump. You don't stay on message.
It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be the greatest show.
Huge. Very, 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 very huge.
Very huge. So, last week I talked to you about one of my recent maladies. In fact, I even showed you a picture with that podcast.
That growth on your hand, might be like a fungus.
Yeah, well, it was either a fungus or it was a, or supposed, or thought to be potentially a possible thing called the basal cancer. And
okay.
So we had to have it removed and then had a biopsy done and sent. And so there I was about 10 days ago. I had it removed. It was from the top on the top of my my left hand, right in between my my middle finger and the finger next to your pinky. I don't know what that one's called. You know, you got the thumb. You got the pointer. You got the middle. You got the pinky. What's that?
It's called your ring finger.
Oh, you know what? I don't wear a ring, so I don't wear
I don't
a
wedding. So there you go.
Oops. I don't wear a wedding ring, even though I'm married. That would be the ring finger, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
No tan line on mine. The best part is I wear a pinky ring on my other hand. A nice little John Lennon Imagine ring on that one. But, yeah. So, anyway. So, you know, it was in an odd little spot, and so, you know, they had to take it off and make a long ways incision, because if he would have done it across ways, then, you know, when I made a fist, it would have been easier to have come open with the stitches. So, you know, this thing wasn't all that big. It was much even smaller than a penny. But it had to come off, apparently, at least. And here's a spoiler alert. At least we thought it did, which gets to my point.
All right.
So it's been healing nice. I went yesterday, got the stitches out, and I've been putting Vaseline on it and just covering it up and attending to it so I don't do anything bad. And so the doctor said when he took it off, I saw it. He actually put it in a nice little bottle of some kind of liquid and said, we'll send this off to the lab. And we'll get, you know, we'll have some, you know, by next week, he had said at that time, we'll have some results as to what it was. Okay, great. So, and he says, come back in 10 days and we'll take the stitches out, 5 stitches. So I'm like, not getting any calls, you know?
No results.
So I'm assuming that when they don't call you, it's not cancer.
Yeah. It's not like, hey, you better come in here because we got to do something else.
Yeah, I'm assuming that, okay, no news is good news in that area. So I'm like, okay. But I still was like, geez, you know, it's been 10 days and we went through this to have this taken off. I've had it for about 2 months, if not more. He's been looking at it, and I had putting some stuff on it because he thought it might be a fungus. So it's been about 2 or 3 months that I've had this thing. So now that it's been removed, I'd like to know what's going on.
Sure.
So I go there, and The doctor walks in, and he's a nice guy, and I've been going to him for about 6 or 7 years, and I've been seeing him a lot lately, doing all this battery of tests for all these different little things, and but he seems a little sheepish to me.
Okay.
And so he has his head down, and he's looking at his charts, and I said, so did we get the results? I didn't get a call.
What's the score, doctor?
Yeah, I didn't get a call. What's the deal? He said, well, it was not a fungus, and it was not the basal cancer. He says it was, and I've got it written down here. What it was a granuloma annulare.
Okay.
So I said, well.
I think I had that dish at a restaurant in Italy once.
Oh, it's fantastic with Parmesan. With finely grated Parmesan.
And some lemon sauce. Oh.
Yeah. Well, no, I usually have the red sauce with it.
Okay.
I don't go with the Marsala. But so I'm like.
What is that?
Yeah. So I said, well, okay, I still don't know what I have.
Yeah. English doctor, please.
Yeah. That didn't help me. He said, well, it's a growth that basically. And this is everything I've been tested for, and these little weird maladies that I've come upon, whether it was this sudden hearing loss or this supposed microscopic blood in my urine or this thing in my eye. Everything I have, no one in the medical community knows why it happens.
You're a curiosity.
Yeah, I'm an enigma. I'm a medical enigma. I have my own chapter now in the New England Journal of Medicine.
They'll start sending you out in a box, and doctors can examine you at like conferences.
Yeah, they're gonna want to have my body when I die to give to medicine because you know they're gonna have to find out what was causing all this.
He's an alien creature, folks.
Yeah. So once again, I've been told what I've heard many times in the last 2 or 3 years. Oh, we don't know why it happens, but it does occur. Okay. That still doesn't give me any solace.
Yeah.
But here's the best part. As I'm staring and looking at this, I would say, inch and a half scar.
Right.
That I have. I'm really upset. This is what the doctor says. Yeah, I'm really upset that I didn't recognize it because it didn't need to be removed.
Well, what would they do instead?
It just goes away.
Oops. Well, then you know what you tell them? You tell them, well, guess what? Then you can refund to my insurance company the charges for removing that thing.
And you could pay for the plastic surgery on my hand because now my career as a hand model is finished.
I think you got a lawsuit right there.
So, I mean, not only did it not need to be removed, there's no treatment for it.
Right.
It just will go away.
Well, like a pimple would go away.
And so I'm sitting there looking at him, and, you know, what am I going to say?
Yeah.
Because it's over with.
Right.
It's
yeah,
done.
It's a moot point.
And I can't say, do we get a refund? Because at the end of the day, I still have this wound that he has to take care of.
Right.
So I don't want to piss this guy off. Because, I mean, I've got my health in his hands at this point.
Yeah.
So I just sort of look at him like, well, and he's like, yeah, you know. I said, you know, and here's the thing that bugs me. So I've had this thing for a while, and he looked at it, as I told you, under that big magnifying glass when I first brought it to his attention. And I said, what is it? And he says, well, it could be a fungus, but it looks like it's an odd place for a fungus. Why don't you buy some ointment, this certain ointment?
And you put that on it, didn't work.
Yeah, so. And then, you know, he says, but it could be this basal cancer. So I go online and I look at pictures of what a basal cancer looks like. And every one of them, it looks similar to this, but every one of them looked much more serious. And they were ulcerated with like a sore. Mine was not.
Right.
Mine just had it was round and it was raised on the sides of it. And then there was like a little crater in the middle of it, but it wasn't a sore, it wasn't bloody, it wasn't open. It sort of looked like, and I even said to him, I said, well, you know, geez, I said, you know, I looked online before he took it off, you know, weeks before, I said, mine doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
Well, then his answer to that was, they only take pictures of the ugly ones.
Oh, okay. Just to freak everybody out.
Yeah. So, I mean, what am I supposed to do? But here's what I hear. But I, so I've gone to a dermatologist for some other things in the past. So I said to myself, and I even said to my wife, I said, you know, I wonder, you know, this guy's a general practitioner and I trust him, but skin is not his forte.
Yeah, they're specialists, like you said, dermatologists that do that.
Yeah, so I'm like, because I even said, oh, do I need to go to a dermatologist? And he said, no, no, I could treat this. And I said, oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, well, turns out he couldn't. And so I was tempted over the last month before I had this thing removed to go to the dermatologist just to get a second opinion and to find out. But then I'm saying, well, what if I go to the dermatologist? And he says, oh, yeah, that's a basal cancer. Let's take it off right now.
Yeah.
Now I look like I'm cheating on my doctor.
Sure, yeah.
That I didn't trust him. So I'm sort of stuck here. So then, as luck would have it, once again, hindsight, like 3 or 4 days before I'm supposed to get this taken off, my wife is going to her dermatologist for something. So I said, hey, look, take a picture of what I have here and show it to your doctor.
See what he says.
And see what she says. Like, you know, is this, you know, my husband's going to have this removed. Does this need to be removed or what is it? So she takes a picture and I don't know why. You know, so there was an assistant in there that was doing most of it. And then, of course, you know, the doctor swoops in for 3 seconds and does something and seems to be very busy. And so my wife showed the picture to the assistant, but not to the doctor, which I wish she would have done. Because the assistant said, well, yeah, that looks, yeah, you couldn't, you know, he probably should have it biopsied at the very least. But I wonder if the real doctor, if she would have seen it, would have looked at it and said, oh, no, that's a granuloma and annulare. I can't even say the damn thing. A granuloma annulare. That doesn't
isn't
need
that
to
the
be.
Person that married, isn't that the woman that married George Clooney?
I think so, yeah. They just had twins. So, you know, maybe that doctor would have seen that picture, you know, her legitimate, you know, dermatologist.
Skin
and
specialist.
And, sure. I'm assuming that other dermatologist I would have gone to would have said, oh, that doesn't need to be taken off. So, needless to say, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not, you know, it's not a huge deal. It wasn't that big of a nuisance. It didn't hurt.
Right.
It didn't get infected. It's fine. It's healing well. It will leave a little scar. I guess from now, I mean, I don't know. You tell me, Mick. I will have a scar. So the question now is, does this scar merit the real story, or should I think I have a free pass?
Oh, I think you do too, because
it was such
a lame move thing.
Yeah.
I think you come up with something like, you know, you pulled somebody out of a burning car.
Yeah. Don't I have a free pass to make up an amazing story as to how I got this scar?
Yeah, you got bit by a moray eel.
Yeah. A moray eel. Wasn't that a Dean Martin song?
Yeah, no. Moray Eel was actually a comedian.
Oh, okay, because I thought that's a moray eel. Isn't that the song? But yeah, so needless to say, it's healing fine. But I'm just like, you're kidding. And to be honest with you, while he didn't seem all that, conciliatory, like, geez, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, it's my bad, you know.
But here's the best part. So he writes it down. He goes, because he knows that I'm interested in all this stuff. He goes, well, here, I'll write it down if you want to take a look at it. So I write it. He writes it down, and I go home afterwards. Still, I'm not mad, but I'm not happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm just kind of in the middle, like, what the hell was that?
Frustrated, sure.
Yeah. So I go home, and I look up granuloma annulare, who I think was one of the people who stabbed Caesar.
I think so. I think you're right about that.
There was Brutus.
He was an accomplice of Brutus.
Yeah, I think it was. The line before, et tu Brute, was et tu granuloma annulare.
But that didn't show up good on a T-shirt, so
yeah,
they cut that out.
That doesn't flow on the tongue, so et tu Brute, Caesar, or Shakespeare said, no, I'm going to edit that out.
Yeah, it doesn't happen,
I'm just going to stay with Brute. So I look it up. And I put, you know, I in the search engine, I put image of, you know, granuloma annulare. And as you said, first picture that came up was George Clooney's wife.
Then a pasta dish. Yeah.
But then I decided that wasn't the right one. And when I was, this is what got me mad. The pictures of it were exactly what mine looked like.
Like you modeled for it.
Yeah, it was like as if they took pictures of my thing. And I'm like, you know, there's no doubt. And it says, first thing, a common growth. And I'm like, I know darn well that if I have gone to the dermatologist.
They would have said that.
They would have said that. You know, and this guy, oh, I'm mad at myself because I didn't recognize it. Well, you know, first of all, I'm not mad at him for not recognizing it because he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
That's not his job. What he should have said to me is, wow, I'm not sure what that is. And I said, should I go to a dermatologist? He should have said, yeah, why don't you go to a dermatologist?
Let's get the referral.
Yeah. And I'm mad at myself for not doing that on my own, but I'm also a little mad at him for not acquiescing and saying, you know what, I don't know what it is. I've been looking at this thing for a month and a half, and then if he really wanted to do, you know, he could have said, you know what, I'm going to go online and see if I could find what we had like a month and a half.
Right, see if he got a match for this.
Instead of just saying, well, I wonder if it's a fungus. So... But here's the best part. So I'm reading the description of it, and apparently it says something. As you know, it sounds like it happens. It frequently, you know, it comes and it comes and goes on its own. There's really no treatment. It may take several months. So I had it for at least 2 months. It wasn't really going away. But here's the best part. And it has something to do with my immune system that perhaps, you know, some little germ or something. But once again, there's nothing wrong with my immune system. It's not that. It's just. They don't know why it happens, but it does. But here's the best part. It usually happens to teenagers and young girls.
Or maybe just a teenage young girl. There you go.
Yeah. So I don't know if my estrogen levels are up. But so I've got a disease like a little girl.
You lucky guy.
Yeah.
You.
I've got a teenage disease. Suddenly, the teenage girl disease. Suddenly, I'm texting. I'm taking selfies. I'm on Snapchat.
Sure, and Instagram, all that stuff.
Yeah,
you also got mono from kissing someone too much.
Yeah, I'm using emojis. I just bought a little kitty. Boo-boo kitty?
Hello, kitty.
Hello, kitty. I just bought a little purse, a boo-boo kitty purse.
And you also got an ankle tattoo.
Yeah. I was at Lollapalooza for 4 days. And I just bought the whole collection of One Direction and Imagine Dragons.
And you're also a Swiftie.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift fan.
Yeah. Oh, I love Tay-Tay. So, yeah, so now suddenly, you know, I've been feeling a little old and feeling a little of my age over the
but
last...
Now you're starting to feel younger.
Yeah, now I feel like a little girl. I just, you know, you know what I did? I went for a Brazilian. Oh, my God. Body hair is, like, so gross. Yuck.
Hey, ew. You're talking on the phone with your girlfriends.
And now when someone asks me a question, I just go, Noah...
And if you're in a bad mood, it might be PMS.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So I feel like a little girl.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So I have a young girl's disease.
Well, you, like I said, you are a medical anomaly.
Yeah.
And I think you can make a fortune just going to medical conferences. You can just be an exhibit that they just look at and examine and say, well, this goes on and this happened and this happened.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, the good thing is I've taken a battery of tests, and they all come back negative, and they all come back with... Never saw this before.
Yeah.
Or not sure why it happened. You know, I'm like, I'm so, you know, I'm so anal. And yes, I did have a colonoscopy. But, you know, I'm so anal. I like to know information.
Sure.
So what drives me crazy about this last couple of years is that I've had these ailments. I've had to treat them or confront them. And yet I have no way of knowing why they're happening or stopping them from the future. Like, oh, well, don't do this anymore and it won't happen.
Right. It's not like, you know, you smoke for 30 years and tumors in your lungs.
I know. I'm sitting there going, when he said, I almost laughed because I even said to him, we don't know why it happens. I'm like, if I haven't heard that 17 times already.
Yeah.
You know, once again, I had this sudden hearing loss. The guy, I lost 90% of my hearing in my left ear overnight. Well, what caused it, Doc? We don't know why it happens. but we know how to cure it. We'll give you two shots in your ear. Oh, thank you very much. You know, what's this on my hand, Doc? I don't know, but I'll cut it off.
You know what it is? The big physical thing that you get from doctors is a shrug of the shoulder.
Yeah.
It's me.
Yeah. Wow. Never saw that before. One in a million shot, Doc. One in a million.
How about that?
Yeah. Wow. Let me take a picture of this. I got to show my other doctor friends this. Jeez. So, needless to say, all's well that ends well, but I didn't need a scar. And then, so here's the best part. Over the last couple of years, I go every, 4 to 6 months for to have my teeth cleaned and everything.
Yeah.
And so every time I go to the dentist, I get this hygienist, and she's always like, over the last couple of years, she asks a very, in her mind, I'm sure, a very benign question. How are things? Or how's it going?
Well, if you got a couple hours,
yeah.
I'll tell you.
And so every time I'm like, I got my 18th shot in my eye, I got a shot in my ear, I got a tube stuck up my butt, I got a tube stuck up my whatever.
Your swing schwung.
Yeah, swing schwung. I'm like, you name it. And so even though for the most part, my wound here, if you will, is healed. And I really don't even need to wear a bandage on it. I just do just for protection.
Yeah, keep it from getting affected.
Yeah, but I told my wife, I said, well, this is great. I said, I bought this adhesive wrap that I put around it.
Yeah.
To protect it if I was, really going to do something with my hands. And so I said, I'm going to wrap this thing up, majorly with this white wrap.
Get a sling.
Yeah, and so when I walk in, she's going to say, how you doing? I'm just going to raise my hand, and she's going to go, what the heck? And so first thing, she opens the door. She says, Jim, why don't you come in? And she's like, how's it go? And then I just raised my hand. She's like, now what?
I was going to say, because one time you probably came in on your crutches.
Yeah, I did. It's like, yeah, that's true. Because I had my boot. I forgot about my boot I had between my cast and my boot. And unbelievable.
Well, I forget which cartoon comic strip used to have. My mom used to tell me about this. There was a character named Joe Biffsplick. And there was a black cloud that followed over his head anywhere he went, and bad things or goofy things would happen.
Well, I'm just grateful. As I said, I don't mind taking tests because to be honest with you, it's actually thankfully we have the insurance, and I'm doing this stuff in that. Okay, I'm getting from head to toe now pictures of everything. I'm getting scopes everywhere.
Yeah,
and so at least to some extent, you never know. It's like okay. I've already given in to the fact that 2017 is just not only have I been decluttering my house of garbage, but I'm decluttering my body.
Right. Yeah.
Of just okay, folks. Just go from head to toe, inspect everything, take everything out that needs to be taken out, and so let's move forward. So for the next 30 years, I didn't go to a doctor for the first 50. So hopefully for the next 50, I won't have to go anymore again. Let's just make sure it's all clean and everything's good. And so I'll give you a 2017 as the year of the tune-up.
There you go. A full clean out, full spring cleaning.
Oh, yeah. Like I said to the doctor, they got to start drilling holes in me because I have no more orifices to check. But so that's the scoop on that. My granuloma annulare. Yeah, thank you. Is now sitting probably in some human waste bin, and I'm sure the guy. Here's the best part. So you're in the lab, right?
Yeah.
And this little jar comes with this floating piece of flesh, and you start to do the tests, and all of a sudden you know damn well that the guy at the lab goes, "What the hell?
Yeah, why don't they send us a pimple next
yeah,
time?
Yeah, this is a granuloma annulare."
Yeah.
What are we getting this for? That thing, and the other guy goes, yeah, doesn't that just go away? And the other guy goes, yeah. Who's the idiot who let his doctor cut it off of him?
There you go.
Oh, I don't know. On the jar, it says James Toronto. What an idiot. Wait until the, wait, oh, yeah, they're like, then. So as they're doing the report, they're cracking up.
Right.
They're like, it's a granuloma, Murray, and. It doesn't need to
next time it'll be an ingrown hair.
And it doesn't need to be treated. And it could have went away in like 2 months. They're like, geez, I can't wait until the doctor gives them this report. So that's sure. so that's why, now remember this too. That's why the doctor wouldn't call me.
Right, he was embarrassed.
Because,
yeah, it's like, I hope that guy just takes his own stitches out.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, because usually he has a nurse call and says, we got your, you know, you got your labs from the blood test, or we got your report from this. And so, but so what she was going to, you know, he's probably like, oh, geez, I can't let my nurse make this call. Like, hello, Mr. Toronto. Yeah, don't worry. The thing we cut off, it didn't need to be treated.
Right.
And it didn't need to be cut off.
Everything's fine.
And we'll see you to take the stitches out for the wound that you didn't need to have stitches for. Great. Thank you. Unbelievable. Anywho, very well. I don't. I mean,
I love happy endings. That's for sure.
Hi-o. Oh, I bet you do. So, I wanted to touch base last weekend, in fact, and I wanted to actually get a chance for you to share one of my favorite stories that you have that I don't know that we've shared on the podcast here. So, just to follow up, this is sort of the follow up show.
Yeah, kind of, you know what? It's covering up loose ends.
Yeah, this is the loose end show. So I've been talking to you folks over the last several months about Sprecher's soda. Mick and I have been talking about our soda protest group.
Stop, our movement.
Stop our. Well, that's another. Speaking of movement, no, I won't even get into that. So you know, our soda protest, which is Stop Our Drinking Assault, and of course our Chicago Pop Party, which was ripped off by several, or at least one that we know of, radio show in this city in August. Rambling Ray. Radio wars start now.
That's right.
The gauntlet. Because I went back. We came up with that on the fly on the podcast of July 10th. July 10th, a month before, all of a sudden, disc jockeys had to, you know, do their stunts. And so was that available to people? Certainly.
Of course it was.
And there you go. They ripped it off. But I'm laying claim to it. Because you know what the thing is? Someone else did it, and what makes me mad, not only A, did they rip it off, B, did they not give any attribution, but C, I'm sure it was lame the way they did it.
It was, and also, here's the other problem. It didn't change the fact that the soda tax stayed in.
Yeah, that's true. So actually, maybe it's best that they did it, and they look stupid. It wasn't meant to be a real idea, folks. It was a joke.
It was a lark, folks.
It was a joke. It was a funny joke, but it was a joke. I did that whole thing so I could just say I want to carbonate the Chicago River.
That dressed up as a giant soda bottle.
Yeah, that was the punchline. I just want to carbonate Chicago River. It didn't mean you had to go act it out. But anyway, so I've been talking about Sprecher's, and just so you know, as I said, when I'm in, I'm in. When I find something I like, I stay with it. You know, Mick, the guy I'm talking to right now, known you for 35 years. I've always would love to have been loyal to my producers for the podcast, but for whatever reason, you know, every 3 weeks, I mean, Kevin, you're sitting next to me. You've been here way too long. I mean, what's going on?
That's my due, huh?
Yeah, I mean, when did you start with me? Like in May, do you think? I think it was sometime
Maybe.
In May.
Could be, yeah.
I think it was
remember.
Like at the beginning of summer. Now, I've been doing this for a year. And I've been through 7 producers for whatever reason. They're always saying,
I can't imagine why.
Yeah. And I mean, believe me, I'm pretty low maintenance, wouldn't you say, Kevin?
Yeah.
You're a diva.
Well, yeah, of course. You know. I mean, I do have Kevin put the Vaseline on my scar.
Sure.
But and not the one on my hand either. But Kevin, I think, is so you've been, I'm trying to think, I don't know if you've been the longest one so far. Hopefully. I you know, but it's been funny how they always give me new producers. But anyway, when I find something I like, I stay with it. Handyman, wife.
Elton John,
mechanic,
sure.
Plumber, you name it. So don't be surprised. When I fell in love with Sprecher's, I'm all in on Sprecher's. So what, of course, did I have to do last weekend?
I went to the Sprecher's Brewery.
You bet. I went to Glendale, Milwaukee. It's 5-10 minutes right outside of Milwaukee. And my wife and I went on the Sprecher's Brewery tour, and I had a ball. I got some great pictures. It's on my Facebook page. And that's how I beat the pop tax, because I actually came home with some Spreckers and didn't have to pay the ridiculous pop tax anyway.
Sweet. There you go. See, you went out of state, which is a little further than going to DuPage County, where I could have scored it for you.
Yeah, now, like I said, my basement stairs are still lined with Spreckers as I slowly begin to deplete my stash, if this ridiculous tax stays in, I may need to meet you, as I said, somewhere at a McDonald's at like 3 in the morning.
Yeah, we'll get a forklift driver to load the stuff into my truck.
And we will cross county lines. But here's the other part of it. So yeah, I had a great time at Spreckers. The great thing is they give you this little wristband for the tour, $8, no big deal. And they give you a nice glass. You get 4 free samples of beer. Or pop if you'd like, pop for the kids or for adults. I had a couple pops. But they give you a nice etched glass.
Nice.
And they don't give you like a little wine tasting with a little few little drops. They give you a full glass of beer. You can get sloshed.
From the tap.
Yeah, from the tap. You can get sloshed if you want. In fact, some guy walked up to me and he said, hey, you know, I'm not going to use these. If you want them. And I said, hey, I got to drive back to Chicago. I can't get a DUI.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you easily, because I had their Bavarian beer, which is really good. And there's a kick to that stuff. So I would highly recommend it. It's on a side street. It's so great. You just turn on the side street, and there's this brewery. But it's a nice little quaint place. And at the end of the tour, they've got a really cool gift shop. And they've got this indoor beer tent.
Beautiful.
And that's where the bar is with the tappers and the tables. And drink away. We were sitting in there for an hour and a half. So had a great time at Spreckers. But here's the other thing. And you and I certainly connect on this. One of my favorite shows every Sunday is the CBS Sunday Morning News with Jane Pauley. What is it called? CBS Sunday Morning?
CBS Sunday Morning.
Yeah, and they play that horn. Whatever that is. And so a couple weeks ago, I'm watching that show, and they kind of recycle some stories because I'm sure people are off. And I think this one already aired, but Mo Rocca, the reporter, and one time, wasn't he a comedian at one point?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Did you see this one about Milwaukee is the frozen custard capital of the country?
I watch this whole show every week, and I saw that too. And he was sampling different custards, frozen custards.
Yeah, so I saw this, and that's where my idea came. You know what? I said to my wife, you know where we're going next Saturday? We're going to do a twin bill. We're starting at Spreckers.
We're going to do some soda, and then we're going to do some...
And then we're going to do some frozen custard sampling. They're right there. If that's the frozen capital of the world, and that's only 90 miles away, why are we here?
That's right.
So that's why we drove up. We spent the whole day. We got there. You know, we had our we left the house at about 10:30. Our tour was at about 12:45, and we got home at 7. What a great way to spend a day! Not too far. Nice drive. Beautiful weather. And my gosh, I did go to 2 of the 3 places that were on that play. You know, because how much frozen custard are you going to eat in one day?
Right.
But I'm planning to go back to the third one. But I went to on a list of the number 1 and number 2. That I saw online after watching that segment. There's a place called Cops, which is actually in Glendale, not far from Sprecher. So we went to Cops, and that was listed as number 1. And then we went to this place called Leon's, which is apparently one of the oldest and one of the best in the country. And I'll tell you, wow, worth the drive, folks, if you like a frozen custard. Now, I like Culver's. And, you know, Culver's is a Milwaukee-based company.
Exactly. It came from there, exactly. The restaurant did, yeah.
Yeah, and now, obviously, they had bigger and grander visions of becoming a national brand. These other guys are pretty much, you know, in Milwaukee, and they're happy to be in Milwaukee and just dominate that market and be known for the oldest or the best in Milwaukee. So I got to tell you, I like Culver's, but my gosh, Cops and Leon's, whew. I'll tell you, I can't even tell you which one's better. They were both excellent.
Now, here's my question, because I've had frozen custard before. Are there different flavors?
Yes, there are. What we did, I mean, my wife got butter pecan. They have different flavors, but then the next time I go, I will taste the different flavors. But to do a true taste test to see which was better,
flavor.
I just went with vanilla, because that's the most pure, and I got vanilla at both places. And I have to say that they were both excellent. However, both different in their own ways. Both excellent in their own ways. But I think after only one tasting, I can already I think I already could tell the difference between a Kops and a Leon's.
Okay.
Kops was, you know, custard is basically egg-based. You could taste the vanilla and egg flavor. It was both of them were very creamy and very dense. I mean, there was something to this. It wasn't just like, you know, sometimes you eat ice cream and it's real thick or real thin.
Yeah.
This stuff was thick. It was thick. It was good. So on the Kops one, if you like a little egg taste, there was an egg taste but I don't mean that in a bad way. It was really good, creamy egg taste with the hint of vanilla. It was really good.
Distinguished it between that and Leon's.
And then Leon's was, once again, thick as well, because I think that's one of the main, attributes of the frozen custard. But Leon's was a little more vanilla-y. You tasted more of the vanilla and less of the egg. But still, oh my gosh. I mean, so I cannot recommend any higher to take a drive if you're in the Chicago or, you know, Illinois area. Strap in and drive up to Milwaukee and look up these places, Kops, KOPPS, and Leon's, and then the other place is called Gillies, Gillies, and that place, I think, might actually be the oldest frozen custard place in the country, if not at least in Milwaukee. So I haven't tasted that one, but there are people that swear by that one.
Well, next time you can take an hour and a half drive and just sample that place.
Yeah. But I remember you telling me a story. So I've been telling friends about this, and like, my God, you drove 90 miles just for frozen custard and to, you know, have a sip of pop? And I'm like, well, hey, you know, that's what I am. That's what I do. But I remember you telling me a story many, many years ago where you used to do a special little trip to get something that you couldn't get anywhere else. What was that?
This was years ago when my mom smoked and my dad smoked and my sister smoked.
Oh, my goodness.
And I didn't. It just never rubbed off on me, thank God. But
now, just real quickly, do you think that, and even though they smoked and they all have passed away, sadly,
right.
Do you think that you were affected by secondhand smoke at all?
I sometimes wonder about that, but I kind of doubt it. I mean, it was usually just in, like, car rides where they'd be puffing away if it was winter out, you know, and I'd be, like, taking that in, you know, which was not fun.
But anyway, so that's another – talk about another time where you're driving with your parents to buy cigarettes.
Yeah. Well, here was –
not exactly a Norman Rockwell painting, but still –
Well, here was the deal. So my mom, we knew that the cigarettes were cheaper in Indiana.
Ah, see, so you were trying to skirt a vice tax as well.
There you go. So my mom knew that, and we'd heard about that. And so there was a gas station / cigarette stand. It was really more of a cigarette stand, and it was in Merrillville.
Oh, in Indiana.
Yeah, in Indiana. And it was, you know, where the Star Plaza Theater is. It's like literally like two blocks west of that on US 30, so it's real easy to find.
You know they're knocking that down.
Yeah, I know. They're knocking down the Star Plaza. So anyway, we drive there, and we would save in the tax, but my dad wanted in on this too. My mom and I would go together, and I would drive, take the highway and all that, and my sister would give us money, and my dad would give money, and then my mom had her money.
Oh, jeez.
And so we would drive there.
What a family outing. Out to get the cigar. Hi-ho. Hi-ho. It's off for cigs we go.
So we would drive, like, you know, it's like an hour and a half drive.
Oh, my God. That's true, right? Yeah,
so the reason we
just for cigarettes. Just for cigarettes.
Okay, is because there was a restaurant almost right next to the cigarette place. It's been open for years. It's called Minor Dunn's, MINERDUNN's.
Oh, like minor, like a miner, like a coal miner.
Yeah, exactly. Now, before I get to Minor Dunn's, let me still finish the cigarette part. So the cigarette part, my mom had this big Lincoln Grand Marquis car, and so it had a huge trunk. You could put 10 bodies in that trunk easily, right? So we would drive out there, and we would hit the cigarette stand first. And I was embarrassed to be there. So my mom would actually go in and buy them all because they were for her and my dad and my sister.
So how many did they buy?
My sister smoked Marlboro. My mom was Virginia Slims, and my dad was Camel.
How many did they buy?
Cartons and cartons. Now, let me put it this way. My mom would come out, and this would be enough cigarettes to last a long time. She would come out with two giant grocery bags.
Oh, my God.
Stuffed to the top.
Hi, Dal. Hi, Dal.
You know, cigarettes do not weigh much, right?
No.
I contend when I would open the trunk and she would put them the two bags in, you could feel the trunk drop. That's how heavy this was.
Oh, my God.
So then we close the trunk. All right, mission accomplished. Now, my treat for this, it was my mom's car, so she had to pay the gas and all that. She would take me to lunch at Meiner Dunn's. Now, Meiner Dunn's has these great cheeseburgers, and they're kind of like, if I could describe them, kind of like a Steak and Shake burger.
Okay.
Okay?
And that was long before Steak and Shake was here.
Exactly. This was years ago. This is back in the 80s, a long time ago, late 80s. So anyway, so they were kind of like a Steak and Shake burger, had crispy edges to the burgers the way they were made, and this place has been open forever. It's still open now. So we would go there, and then she'd get one, and I'd get two giant cheeseburgers with fries. So they're getting the cigarettes that are bad for them. I'm getting the cheeseburgers and the fries that are bad for me.
What a great little fam. What a great bonding experience.
It was a whole health journey, right?
You're killing your lungs and stuffing your arteries.
Yeah, clogging my intestines up. And then the best part, speaking of ice creams or custards and stuff, at Meiner Dunn's, they had a dessert menu, but no one ever used to go for it because they'd give you a little cup of sherbet with your meal.
Nice.
So, anyway, that was the journey. So we would go there, like I said, hour and a half drive, 10 minutes to go buy her smokes.
And the trunk, of course, is scraping on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. We got sparks coming out of the back of the bumper and all that. And then we'd go stuff ourselves at Meiner Dunn's and then hit the bathroom and then drive back. So we're talking about between the drives, the cigarettes, and then the dining, a little less time than you spend in Milwaukee. Probably about the whole journey is about 4 hours, 4.5 hours.
Ain't that America for you and me?
That's what it is.
Ain't that America? Something to see, baby.
Cheap smokes.
Cheap smokes for you and me. Oh, my God. Yeah, once again, that's quite a Norman Rockwell painting that you're painting. So let's go get smokes.
You guys would all just shake your heads.
Oh.
And I'd be like, hey, standard operational procedure in this house, pal.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, and with all due respect, though, didn't both of your parents have cancer?
My mom didn't. My mom just passed of a sudden heart attack. She actually quit in smoking in 92. And by the way, when she quit, the Virginia Slims Menthol Company almost went out of business.
I was just going to say, that place, that cigarette stand was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait.
We used to get Christmas cards.
What are you talking about here? Take some free ones. Just don't quit.
Yeah. So my mom quit in 92, and then she lived a long time. If she hadn't, she would have gotten cancer for sure. But she passed in 2009. But my father, yeah, sadly, my dad, he had quit smoking about 3 months before he was diagnosed with cancer in 93. And 3 months after that, he had passed away. And he knew it was a danger and a risk. I mean, my dad was very gracious with knowing that, hey, I shouldn't have smoked all those years. This is really stupid, all those kinds of things. And he was grateful that I didn't smoke. So, but cigarettes ended his life at age 58, and he should have lived to be at least 90 because he was very healthy outside of that.
He was only 58, huh?
Yeah, jeez. Only 58. So, again, I look back and I still laugh at it because it's like, hey, it's in the books, folks. It's in the record books. You can't change this. You know?
Well, and did you notice how on the way to the cigarette store, the cigarette stand, you got a lot better gas mileage?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Than you did on the way back because the car was like 40 pounds.
To, fill up again because we were kind of running low.
Oh, my God. That's great. Is Meiner Dunn still open?
Yeah, Meiner Dunn is a very good place. It's a regular family restaurant. It's nothing real fancy, and it just looks like a typical diner place. But, they're still open, and they got great food there.
I'm going to have to check that out weekend.
Well, that was the other thing, because then at that times when I take my mom to concerts at the Star Plaza, we went to go see Tanya Tucker, and we saw some other shows there, we would leave early so we could go get dinner first at Meiner Dunn's and then go to the concert afterwards. And this is after she quit smoking, so there was no need for the cigarette stand stop.
So it was just food.
Yeah, just food, just bad food.
Yeah, that was just a cholesterol binge then.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, and this is a line that Don Henley used to use when he talked about the Sunset Grill. The food at Minor Dunn's is bad for the heart, but good for the soul.
There you go. Well, thanks for sharing that beautiful childhood memory.
Oh, you know what? It's like a Wonder Years thing.
Well, once again, always fun to talk to you, and we always have fun here. So hopefully, how many more weeks do we have until you have to start school again?
This is it, pal. This is the farewell, because next week we're back in school.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for making this last several months on the podcast a lot fun. And if you ever have a day off on the day that we record, hopefully we can talk to you again.
Well, there'll be a time in November, because we'll have a week off. The week of Thanksgiving, we get the whole week off.
Well, that's cool.
So we'll find some time, definitely. And before then, I'm sure I'll be bugging you about some other stuff, I'm sure, at some point.
Well, very good. Well, you certainly left us with a great little memory to keep us well-fed until you return.
Smokes and bad food.
Okay, very good. Hey, that's what life's all about.
There you go.
All right, Mick, take care.
All right, see you too, bud.
Mick Kaler. And we return here to Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic at WGNplus.com. And on the phone, we have our little pop culturette. Are you a pop culturette? Is that sexist? Is that sexist?
I guess.
Oh, it's sexist or it's okay?
No, I'm not. It's hard to offend me, so.
Oh, that's good. Okay, so you're my little.
It's okay with me.
My little pop culturette.
Right.
So as we enter the Pop Culture Club, Emily, of course, is one of our charter members, a self-avowed pop culture guru. And today's kind of a tie-up loose ends show, in addition to talking about some topics here. So we will get into a topic, hopefully. And if not, we'll do it next week. But these two things I have to bring up with you. Because it's imperative to, as I said, to serve the audience, and we throw this stuff out, and I like to do follow-ups when things happen. So, first one, I can't remember which one I want to tell you first. Okay, I will. So I'll save the best one for last. So a couple weeks ago, I went to Arlington Park. And to the horses, play the horses, and I had a nice little afternoon there. And so I'm not usually a hunch better, but if there is a horse that, you know, it's kind of a hunch bet, I will bet it sometimes. But I'm not really. I usually don't go for that. I go for the stats. You know, what did the horse run that morning when they trained, and how many times have they, you know, won on the turf as opposed to the dirt, and how much weight does he have? All that stuff. But every so often, flights of fancy will enter my head, and I'll just go, oh, even if the horse is, you know, 30-1, oh, but look at the name on it. So for whatever reason, this year, this time I went, I was very hunch betting. Needless to say, I didn't win any of my hunch bets. There was a horse called Max Factor. Well, my godson, Patrick, just had a son named Max.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right?
I see the connection.
8-1. I think the horse is still running. I don't think the horse has still come in. Came in like...
Oh, no.
Yeah, came in like fifth out of eight horses.
Oh.
Then, everybody knows I'm a huge fan of the Blackhawks Hall of Fame goaltender, Tony Esposito. Can't believe it. There's a horse named Espo, E-S-P-O, which was Tony Esposito's nickname, Espo.
I mean, it's obviously calling your name.
Yeah, so what am I going to do? I bet on Espo. Came in sixth out of seven race horses. Okay. My dad's name is Jimmy. We talked about my dad's nickname. My dad's name was Jim, and his middle name started with a D. There's a horse named Jimmy D.
Okay.
Now, how do I not? And my dad is the guy who brought me to the track as a young kid all the time. He loved going to the track. I would go to Arlington with him all the time. So every time I go to Arlington, I have these warm, fuzzy memories of me and my dad and, you know, going to the track and, you know, and just sharing some time. So how do I not bet on Jimmy D?
Right. Seems like you can't lose.
Came in fifth. So I'm sitting there going, you know, but I have, I mean, in my mind, I'm like, geez, if I didn't bet some of these, then I would have kicked myself, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Two Twin Peaks horses.
Oh.
One was Hawks, Hawks Ready. There's a character named Hawk. He's a police guy. He was from the original and is one of the new one, Hawk. And he's still running as well. I think he just finished the race, and I went there 2 weeks ago. I think he's still running. And then Cooper's Keeper, Dale Cooper.
Oh, wow.
How do I not bet on Cooper's Keeper? I did bet on Cooper's Keeper. He did win. He did win.
Well, there you go.
But here's my connection.
Did he at least win enough to make up for all of the
No, previous? Not at all. In fact, I sent an email to Tony Esposito, and I said, you owe me $10. And I think you, Emily, are going to owe me
$10. Oh, no. What happened?
Because in the fourth race, against my better judgment, because I knew this horse didn't have a chance, but...
Oh, no.
Emily's Entourage. Emily's...
Now, why would you think that wouldn't have a chance?
Emily's... Because I looked at the horse's stats. But I'm like, you know, I talk to Emily every week. And, you know, it's a good friend. How do I not bet on Emily's Entourage?
Clearly a sign.
I don't think Emily's Entourage has even left the gate yet. That's how bad that horse did.
So now how much do I owe you?
You owe me 10 because I boxed it. There was Emily and the real horse I thought would win. And the one I thought would win did win. But your horse did not come in second or first, so I lost my bet. Thank you very much.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Emily's Entourage. Plus, I figured, wow, Emily's Entourage, not only is there some nice alliteration there, but, you know, Emily loves Sex and the City.
That's right.
And Entourage was like the male version of Sex and the City.
Right.
So I'm looking at all these hunch bet connections.
A little tenuous connection.
Well,
okay.
Yeah, aside from the name Emily, I don't think it's that tenuous. Your name is Emily.
I know. I'm saying just the
I know.
The connection to the Entourage TV show.
I understand that, but I was trying so hard.
You are theoretically part of my Entourage.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know.
Well, I'm just saying is I so was trying to find some way to justify this bet, because on paper it was a horrible bet, and it proved to be a horrible bet, aside from the name.
Oh, so. See, this is why I don't gamble.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks a lot, Emily's Entourage.
So I'll put the check in the mail.
Okay. So now here's the one.
I would say I'll Venmo you.
I don't even.
Something tells me
what?
I have no idea what that means.
I you can't do that to me. I'm married. What is that? You're going to Venmo me? What the hell?
Yes.
Kevin, do you know what that
now,
means?
If you
what? Wait, wait, Kevin,
Venmo.
Wait. I got Kevin, my producer here. He's 31. You know what that means?
Venmo, yeah.
What does that mean?
It's an app.
And what does that mean, though? It's an app.
Like 30 minutes ago.
It's like PayPal, kind of. You can cash each other back. There's also a Cash App. There's a bunch of them. You can.
And what does Venmo mean?
I don't know. Emily, do you know?
The name of the app. It's the,
yeah.
The name of the app.
What's
the
takeoff?
I owe you $10, I go in, I find you, I pay you your $10, and we're good.
You Venmo me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I use Cash App, personally.
But see, because you have a flip phone and you have no idea what Venmo is, now I have to, like, write you a check and put it in the mail.
Yeah.
What a pain!
Oh wow! What a terrible and arduous task!
I don't think I've had to do that for like 15 years.
Although I should, I just recently opened up a bank account at Chase, and so I mean, don't go crazy. I don't have the Chase app.
Oh, I can quick pay you.
No, you can't.
But I quick pay. Yes.
No, I don't have that. But I do have online banking.
For the first time?
Yeah.
Wow. Is this like your first foray into online
bank? Now, I'm not paying any checks, but I, at least I can go on and check my. And I mean, the one thing I did do is I transferred money.
Ooh.
I mean, I was a little leery of that. Didn't seem real to me. Seemed fake.
If I'm going to be honest with you, I don't balance my checkbook at all.
Oh, that's nice.
I just go online all the time and monitor it. Yeah.
I don't have a checkbook anymore.
See, there you go.
Oh, don't have a I love my checkbook.
I need a checkbook.
I love my checkbook. I love it. I have the little holder, and I have a little paper clip to keep all the other pages, you know, together. So when I open it up, it comes right to where my balance is. I don't have to keep shuffling through. I love my paycheck. I love my. My checkbook. But anyway, so. Ugh. So you, what are you going to do? You're going to Venmo me?
Yeah, I'll Venmo you.
Okay. Will that disappear in 30 seconds or something, too? Or is that Snapchat?
No. Yeah, right.
Well, don't Venmo me. You know what to do? Go to the damn post office, buy a friggin' stamp, and put it on an envelope.
So, okay. For next time I'm in Chicago, I will hand you a $10 bill.
Now, you're coming to Chicago, aren't you?
Right in the palm. I am actually coming to Chicago.
Yeah, when are you coming?
I'm going to be there next week.
Yeah.
I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there twice in August. So this is. Yeah,
okay. Well, let me. If you have any time, let's get together.
I will message you my date.
You're going to message me? How? You're going to send me an email or what?
Calm down.
You're going to call me on the phone or what are you going to do?
I was just saying I would message you that has sent you into a total panic.
Yeah, oh my God, don't. What are you going
to? What do I need to watch?
You're going to Venmo me with a message now?
How about this? I'll do it on Facebook, a platform that you seem to be getting comfortable with.
That's okay. You could messenger me on Facebook. That's okay. So here's the other thing that I have to tell you. So several weeks ago, you whether you know it or not, and I tried to not let on and cover up my pain and my hurt.
Uh-oh.
But you savagely commented on how I cannot do a British accent.
Oh, well.
Now, this is Emily, who for how many years did you live in England?
Almost 7.
Wow, you lived there that long.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
So Emily lived in England for 7 years. She's clearly an Anglo snob. I love England as well. I've never lived there, but I've probably visited there 15 to 20 times in the last 25 years. I just love going to England. And I do pride myself on my British accent, because I have British friends, and I am an Anglophile. So, Emily, yeah. I think
and
I
you
was...
Are, and you are Elton Jim.
And I am Elton Jim.
What,
right, exactly.
British? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we had our first cat's name was Thames, after the river. Mm-hmm. Our current cat's name is Grimsby, which is a town in England.
Yeah.
So, I'm something of an Anglophile. My name is on a row in the Globe Theater.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I helped sponsor a row about 20 years ago. So every time I go to the Globe there in England, I see my name on there, which is pretty cool to know that my name is in the Globe Theater in England right now as we speak. So yeah. I consider myself an Anglophile, and I have done a few plays where I have played British characters, including Bob Cratchit.
Right.
And Mr. Fezziwig from Christmas Carol.
Yes, you may have mentioned that.
So you cruelly made fun of my British. You said that I have a horrible British accent. And I
don't think I said that. I think what I said was it was the worst British accent I've ever heard.
Okay. Oh, well, that pads it.
So you can just take that for what it's worth.
Okay. So let me just tell you, miss, I lived in England for 7 years, and I know an English accent when I hear it. I've just been cast in a play.
Oh.
And it's an Agatha Christie play. And it takes place in England. And I am playing Captain Philip Lombard, who, like everyone else in the play, is British. And when I auditioned, I did my British accent, and I got the part.
Well, now, which British accent did you use? Did you use the
Well, I didn't use. You see.
Did you use your British, your mashup British accent, where you basically hit like every different type of accent?
You see, my character is not. He's more formal, if you will. You know what I mean? So I can't go with my Cockney accent. Which I always like to do, but I can't do that one because he's more of an adventurer, if you will, and so I like to do that one because it's more obvious. But at the same time, it wouldn't fit the character, so I can't do that one. And right there, I actually sounded a little like Michael Caine, didn't I? Oh. Hello, Batman.
You do actually sound a little like Michael.
Hello, Batman. You can't do that, Batman. I'm Alfred, and you can't do that. But I'm using more of my upper class British accent as Captain Philip Lombard. Hello, dear. And so that's what I'm sort of going with is more of a formal kind of British accent, and I will be presenting that accent. On September the 29th through October 6th, in a production of Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None, also known as Ten Little Soldiers. So just so you know, Miss Anglophile, that apparently others believe that my accent is quite good and that I will be performing it for paying audiences. Thank you very much. So there.
Well, congratulations.
So there.
I will be rooting for you. I hope you win the Tony Award for Best British Accent in a regional theater production. I'm sure that you will.
I mean, I had to laugh when I went for this. I mean, I was actually, it was so funny. You were totally in my head.
Oh, no. Did I make you feel subconscious?
Yeah, because I actually, I'll be honest with you, I have always been so confident of my British accent that I would never even question doing it. In fact, on my acting resume, when it says any special talents, the first one is British accent. And yet, so I see this audition for this Agatha Christie, and I'm assuming that it's going to be all British accents.
Sure, yeah.
And I go to my, and I actually said to myself, geez, I wonder if I should go. Emily says I don't have a good British accent. Maybe I shouldn't go. But I decided to go against your advice and to spurn your hurtful comments.
My criticisms.
Your criticisms. And I went and I read the part the way I thought that Captain Lombard would sound. I don't know my lines yet, so I can't give it to you. But as I begin to memorize my lines, I will begin to let you hear how I am developing the character and and developing my accent. And in fact, the funny thing is that our director, I haven't even heard it yet, but he has sent us, everybody in the cast, not just me, just for your information, a little audio file that has a British accent, and he said you should listen to this and listen to it over and hear how it should sound. Now the funny thing is, have you ever watched the show Broadchurch?
No, I have heard of it though.
Yeah, it's on BBC America, which is one of my favorite stations. because I love British things, even though you don't think so. And
I believe you that you do.
And there, I just don't think you do a good accent. And listen to her; she's still going there. Wow, boy.
It's not that it's not good. It's just the worst British accent I've ever heard.
Is there a discerning line between those two?
Just to be really clear, that's all.
But there's a guy on there. Now, an actor named is David Tennant. He's been on a lot of shows. He actually was one of the Doctor Who's several years ago.
Oh, yeah, I do know who.
With a beard?
Yeah.
Kind of a skinny guy with brown hair and a beard?
Mm-hmm.
This guy must be Scottish or something, because his accent is so thick that when we watch this show, I mean, sometimes my wife and I just look at one another and we have to stop it and rewind like seven times, because he's like, hello, Mila.
I can't understand anything. Yeah.
Hello, Mila. Oh, he says, yeah. And it's like, wow, what the hell?
Do you know what? Do you know what happened to me actually once, just a quick aside? When I was living over there, I had to call, my bank was HSBC. I had to call and I had to arrange something. It had to do with my bank account. I don't know what it was. I had to get something figured out. And the guy who took my call must have been in a call center in Scotland. And he was asking me questions. Like, and this was like an important matter. It had to do with like my bank account. And he was asking me questions. I couldn't understand what he was saying, to the point where I actually just had to hang up and call back.
And try to get someone else.
Because I was like, and I had to ask him to repeat himself so many times. And he very patiently did. It was really nice of him. But ultimately, I was like, I have to be able to understand what this person is saying if I want to make sure this transaction goes through properly. So I just hung up and called back and got a different call center somewhere in a different part of the world.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, there are some people that really have a thick accent. I remember, like I said, when I did this one version of Christmas Carol where I had to play several different roles. And so I have one friend that has a very... in England, who has a very, you know, kind of normalish accent. So I use that for Bob Cratchit. But I have another friend that we know who was our bellman on our honeymoon, who we've become friends with over the last 25 years. And every time we go to London, we exchange Christmas cards, and we always see him when we go there. And he's from Croydon, which is a very kind of blue collarish area. And so he told like this, sir, how you doing, sir? What are you doing?
I think that's where Kate Moss is from.
Oh, really?
You know, the model. Yeah, British model.
Yeah, and so he whenever I had to do, like, I had to do this the guy, if you remember in the Christmas Carol, one of the characters is a in one of the ghosts of Christmas Present, when the maids would have picked up Scrooge's garments and brought them to like some junk dealer to sell, and he's like this real kind of, you know, gritty, greasy, low-life guy. And so I always used for the character of old Joe. You mean you took the bed curtains down right while he was lying there? And that's the way Dave Brown always talked, you know, when he talked, our bellman friend. How you doing, sir? What are you doing? You gonna go? You want to get a pint over at the pub? I live in Croydon. My son and I play soccer together. I don't play anymore because I'm a little older now. But, you know, when I was younger, I used to play very well. And so it's been
a little, actually, this is, you could also use this as your Keith Richards.
That's right. I, you know, I just love Chuck Berry. I think he's amazing. I don't know what else I can say about him. He's very rock and roll is what he did.
Now that was good.
Oh!
Impersonation and an accent.
Okay.
So, Don't get too cocky.
All right. So anyway, so just so you know, Miss Anglo.
Well, look, if it makes you feel any better, I lived there for 7 years, and I cannot do a British accent.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
So.
I mean, you know, I didn't. That's why I'm surprised to hear that you lived there that long, because I never really. You did not pick up an accent, did you?
No.
Did you try? You weren't like Madonna?
No. But there are certain things that, I mean, you start to inevitably, like, pick up on the vernacular that's, like, very specific.
Oh, right, like the lingo.
Because, Yeah, because you certain things you almost have to. You know, like you can't really say apartment. You kind of have to start saying flat because otherwise the Brits will act like they have no idea what you're talking about. Or it actually means something different. You know, like an apartment there might mean like a big palatial penthouse type thing versus a flat, which is like what you live in. You
right,
know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you're a normal person.
Well, no, I mean,
so like stuff like that. Or you start to say lift instead of elevator because, once again, if you say elevator, people, even though they know what you mean, they look at you like, you mean the lift, you know? And so some things you inevitably you just start using.
Well, they don't, like for instance.
It's not about the accent.
Well, like they don't say cell phone. They say you're mobile.
Mobile. Yeah.
Where's your mobile number?
My mobile, yeah. And after 7 years, though, I still have a hard time saying cell phone.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Interesting. And then one phrase that I noticed there, which has several years ago, which suddenly, and I don't know if it's just because of the internet and we're more connected, and so people are you know in touch more with you know with different cultures more than they were several years ago. But I remember hearing this, and it was always a very British term, and now I hear it being used quite a bit. And I actually used it more in writing than I did speaking early on, because I didn't really hear a lot of people say it. So I was a little leery of using it in conversation, but I didn't mind using it when I wrote about different things because you could tell what I meant, you know, by the way I used it. But the term spot on, you know, you know, that's spot on, you know, now people use that all the time. Oh, that's spot on. But I used to always hear that in England almost primarily.
Yeah, I think like I feel like that must have made its way over here before I moved because I don't think of that as specifically a British term, but
oh really?
That
oh
yeah.
No, I always thought that was, and now I hear it and see it written and said all the time. But yeah, no, I mean I think you definitely you know if you live there, you certainly have to. You know, like even like what was interesting, there's a show called The American Ripper the whole idea of it. It's a kind of an investigative show. And there's a descendant of, you know, the mass murder here in Chicago, H.H. Holmes, you know, from The Devil in the White City.
Well, oh, yeah.
And so there's a relative who's here in Chicago, in fact, who claims that H.H. Holmes was Jack the Ripper.
Oh,
that he left Chicago and actually, you know, continued or either began his crimes there or, you know, vice versa. And so so the whole show every week is about him trying to prove his theory. And one of the things that they brought up to your point was that there's a letter that Jack the Ripper that they have, you know, verified that this was from whoever was Jack the Ripper, because he would send these letters to the newspaper at the time. And there was facts and details in the letters that he wrote that were never released to the press. So the fact that he put those in there shows that he knew certain details about the crimes that no one could have possibly known about. So they verified it, that these did come from Jack the Ripper. And one of the ways that they were saying is that they felt that this letter was not written by a British person, even though it was validated as being written by Jack the Ripper, because he said right away, the term you can't catch me right away or something, whereas a British person would say straight away.
Straight away, yeah, they would say straight away.
Yeah, and so once again, I mean, I would assume that while you're there, you do. It's not trying to be pompous or pretentious. You're living within a culture, so you have to talk the way everyone else does, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you do over time. You just adapt, and I mean, in some ways, it is a bit like when you move to a foreign country and you just start picking up the actual language, you know? I mean, even though they're speaking English there, there is a different vernacular, and you do start to really just, like, kind of assimilate, and yeah. And it really isn't. It isn't to be pretentious, and it's not, like, yeah, it just kind of happens over time.
Now, you met your husband while you lived in England, right?
Yes, I did.
So now, he was there for work as well as you were. How long was he there?
He was there for 9 years.
Now, did he pick up any kind of an accent at all?
No, not at all. And he didn't... could not do a British accent at all, no.
Well, He can't, but I obviously can.
He did pick up British citizenship, so he cannot do the accent, but he is technically a British citizen.
Why?
He has a British passport. Well, because if you live there long enough, which actually I left just right around the time when I could have applied for citizenship. But if you live there long enough, at a certain point, you can apply for residency.
And what's the advantage of that? What's the advantage of that?
Oh, well, there's a big advantage. I mean, number one, you can leave, and then you can move back there at any time in your life. You don't have to be sponsored by a company, or
you don't
have to like be restricted to like a visiting visa.
Right.
You know, you can come and go as you please. I mean, we could move there next week if we wanted to and not have too much of an issue. I mean, he has a British passport, and so does my son. My daughter and I would probably need to just apply for like partner and family visas, but that wouldn't be a big deal if my
Why does your son have one?
Because my husband has it, and that's the thing. And so when James was born 7 years ago, he was able to apply for and get a British passport without ever even stepping foot in the UK.
Wow.
Just because his father is a British citizen.
Oh,
but
interesting.
It's very possible that rule has changed. We were actually talking about looking into it for our daughter, and in the meantime, especially with like all the Brexit stuff that's going on, and that may muddy the waters when it comes to all kinds of like passport things. But I don't know if that still is the case. I mean, it could be the case that they've changed it and you might have to actually be living there
in order
to get it. But yeah, so that was, now I, you know, you go through this process. So when we lived there, it was like, if you, after like four or 5 years, you could become a legal resident of the UK. And then after like another year or two, you could apply for citizenship, and you take a test, and you know, you send in an application, and it can take like months and months for it to come back to you. You never really know when it's going to come through, but when it does, you go. It's like a ceremony. It's like a citizenship.
Oh, yeah, right.
You pledge allegiance to the Queen.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and it was actually a really proud day when my husband got it. I was really proud of him, and I know he was really happy about it. And you know, the other thing too is like, it just practical matters. I mean, buying property is so much easier if you're a citizen, you know. And equally, like it would allow us to be able to buy a property. I mean, once again, this might change with Brexit, but buy property kind of anywhere in the EU. So,
you
know,
cool.
if you had the means to buy, you know, your vacation home in, you know, the south of France, you know, it would make it a little bit easier. It's nice to have. And I think he's glad that he has it. And
yeah, that's cool.
And actually it helped me get into the country once when they were giving me a hard time at immigration.
Oh, wow. Well, that's cool.
So yeah, but but he can't do the accent.
No.
Oh, there you go.
Well, that's too bad because I can. So.
We'll see about that.
Yeah. So anyway, just to recap, you owe me $10 for betting on Emily's Entourage, which lost at Arlington, and you owe me an apology for your harsh comments about my bracelet.
Well, no, I want to wait to see what the reviews are on the play before you get an apology.
Okay.
I need to see hardcore evidence that someone other than you, that you've done a really good British accent.
All right. Well, we didn't talk we were going to talk about today, but it doesn't matter. We will talk about that in the future. But I just wanted to make sure that we closed up some of those loose ends. So, my little pop culturette, I will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, take care. Emily Arminetti joining us here on the podcast. And that is the end of episode 65 of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Every week, every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com. And you can go to my landing page and binge on the other 64 episodes that are up there just waiting for you to enjoy. I'm Elton Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Hope you had a good time. This is the only podcast that goes from the end of the web to your screen.